So I'm super excited to be back again after last year. It was fun being here with Jace Melzer and myself last year talking about ASP.NET and .NET. And now I'm part of the .NET team. Early this year, we took the ASP.NET team and the .NET teams and we merged those two teams back together, back into a single team. And so now I'm the .NET Scott Hunter, not the ASP.NET Scott Hunter. So anyways, as a .NET person and as a .NET developer, I can't imagine a better time to be a .NET developer. When I joined the company, you know, we had web and we had Windows desktop, and those are the main two areas that we actually had for .NET developers. If you look at where we're at today, with the universal Windows platform, you can build a .NET application that runs on Windows phones and tablets and desktops. With Xamarin, which we just acquired a few weeks ago, you can now build mobile apps on iOS, Android, and Mac OS X. And those tools are free for everybody. So anybody that's got a Visual Studio license can use the Xamarin tools for free. .NET Core, which my team started a couple years ago, allows you to build cross-platform server applications, today working on Mac, Windows, and Linux. And then, of course, we have ASP.NET Core, which is the new high-performance version of ASP.NET. So I like to think of this version of .NET or the state we are with .NET today is any application you want to build, you can build with .NET. And so it's never a better time to be a .NET developer. As I think of the .NET platform today, we've been shipping .NET framework since 2002. And you build Windows desktop applications, ASP.NET applications, WCF applications, WPF applications, a lot of application types on top of that. We've got Xamarin, which I was just talking about before. That's now part of the Microsoft family. And this lets you build iOS, Android, and Mac OS X applications on the .NET platform. And then, of course, we are now adding .NET Core, which is a new version of .NET designed for cross-platform server applications. When I think of these types, they're all a little different. And the .NET framework is a Windows component. The only way you'll get it is installing Windows and getting a new version of Windows. Both .NET Core and Xamarin are installed as part of the actual application. And so as an ASP.NET guy, that was great because it means a customer can use the newest version of ASP.NET today without affecting anything on the machine, which I think is very important. And then no matter what part of the .NET framework you're in, you're going to share our same compilers, our same languages, C# and VB and F#, and the runtime components like garbage collectors, JIT, just-in-time compilers, across all the platforms. But at the same time, it's also a scary message. If I look at this, I've got a couple of different base class libraries. We built the first base class library in 2002 with the .NET framework, and then Mono came along. Mono was an implementation of .NET that was developed in a clean room, which meant they didn't look at any of our source code that tried to copy a lot of our base class libraries. And then .NET Core is yet another one of these things. And so the reality today is, if you're building .NET, you might have a different base class library depending on which framework model that you're actually running on top of. And this starts to show itself when you start trying to share code across these applications. As part of the .NET team, I want to make it super easy for everybody in this room that's building on top of .NET to be able to take your source code and fluidly move it from building a desktop application to an ASP.NET application or to even a iOS, Android application on Xamarin. But it doesn't work that way today. Today, you build what we call a PCL. That's a portable class library. That's a library of .NET you can share across all these platforms. But the way it works is we take the .NET framework, we take Mono, and we put them on top of each other and say, what's the smallest area of commonality or the biggest area of common stuff between those, which is actually really small. And that's all you can develop against. That means if you're building a PCL today, you can't do a lot in there. Another problem with a PCL, if you want to build a portable class library, you have to decide when you build it which of these frameworks you're going to target. The problem with that is what if another one comes up in the future? Your PCL, your portable class library, won't work on that new framework because you have to just make this decision at the time you actually write the portable class library. And so That brings us a couple of problems, which is key APIs are not present on all platforms. An example of this was when UWP first shipped, there was no file I/O. That makes no sense. Each of those platforms has a different BCL implementation, so you don't get the same functionality. In the case of Mono, because they're not using our source code in some places, it could be buggier than ours. You have to target a small piece of .NET if you want to share code across all those platforms. So moving forward, what we want to do is we're going to create something we call the .NET Standard Library. And this is a single BCL that crosses .NET Framework, it crosses .NET Core, and it crosses Xamarin. And this is going to be a big library, meaning that as a .NET developer, you will no longer write code that targets the .NET Framework, or not write code that targets .NET Core, or write code that targets Mono. What you're going to do is you're going to write code that targets the .NET standard. And by doing that, any code you write that targets the standard will be able to run on all of the app models that I have on top here, the full framework, .NET Core, and Xamarin. This means if I want to share code, sharing code is now really easy. I can write a class library that targets the .NET standard, and it easily can work across all these platforms. It also means that as customers in the room, customers always come to me and they say, Scott, when is the next version of .NET Framework going to come out? Scott Hanselman this morning was saying that .NET 4.6.2 was just released in November. I would actually like to slow those things down, because in the future, where I see things happening, jump here. Where I see things happening is we are going to actually write more new code in the .NET standard than we are in the .NET framework or .NET Core or Mono. And the reason we're going to do that is by writing code in the .NET standard, that code can be shared everywhere. And so as a customer, the way you're going to look at this is hopefully you're not going to come to me next year or the year after and say, Scott, when is .NET 4.7 going to ship, or when is .NET 4.8 going to ship? You're going to say, I'm using .NET Standard 2.0, and I'm curious when .NET Standard 2.1 is going to ship. The nice thing about the .NET Standard is it can ship at whatever speed it wants to ship. It can ship without waiting for a .NET Framework, or waiting for a .NET Core, or waiting for a Xamarin. So you're going to see this thing grow and move faster moving forward. And it's just NuGet packages. No matter which of these stacks that you're working on, the full framework, .NET Core, or Xamarin, obviously we're going to always build first-class tools to let you develop against these. So Visual Studio, whether you're a WinForm customer, a WPF customer, an ASP.NET Core customer, an iOS customer, we're always going to add more value there. And then finally, I'd like to get to a point where the least innovation that we do happens at this top level here. I only want to change the .NET framework when I need to change WPF or Windows forms, because those ship with new capabilities when a new Windows release happens. And so this is where we see the future of .NET moving. So as I said before, the big takeaway is not expecting .NET Core 2.0 or .NET Framework 4.7. You're going to be asking yourself, when is the next .NET standard going to ship? And we think we're going to be able to ship these things once a quarter. So they're going to come out once every 3 or 4 months. And the nice thing is it doesn't require you to change your developer machine or change your server to take advantage of these things. I'm going to go through this quickly because I think everybody knows this. We open source .NET. It's on .net.github.io, and you can go up there and see all the source code. You can see our commits into the source code. We've been doing this for a couple of years. It's super active. I don't know if Scott Hanselman mentioned that earlier when he was talking about performance, but 40% of our performance improvements did not even come from Microsoft. When you look at those ASP.NET Core performance results, they didn't come from us necessarily. Some of them actually came from the community, 40% of those. So that's I'm really excited about that. If you're an open source developer in the room, we have this thing called the .NET Foundation, and it's a great place if you have any open source code that you want to share to the rest of the .NET community for you to come and submit to. So you can just go and Google .NET Foundation. It'll take you to the homepage of the .NET Foundation and put your source code there, and you'll get a bunch of benefits, including us actually advertising your source code. We just recently at Build, we added Mono there, and we added the Xamarin SDKs as well. So As we brought Xamarin into the company, we took their source code and placed it into the .NET Foundation as well. Also at Build, we announced, because we're doing cross-platform stuff now, we announced that JetBrains, they're now part of the foundation. JetBrains has their own IDE for building C#. C# and .NET have gotten so cool now, and the fact that they run on multiple platforms, that we have third-party IDEs sprouting up to actually try to embrace our platform. Red Hat actually has a URL you can go to, which is redhatloves.net. And if you go there, it'll actually show you the developer pages of how to get started using .NET on Red Hat. And finally, Unity, for building games on .NET, they're now part of our foundation as well. Now, let's talk about the tech we have right now. So at the Build conference, and that was at the end of April, we announced a new version of .NET. So 4.62 was announced there. And there's a bunch of improvements there. There's a bunch of WPF improvements around DPI. We're continuing to work on WinForms as well. We want to make sure that WinForms works great on high-density monitors. And so you'll see later in the year, you'll see some updates there as well, I hope. And we're continually, as cryptography standards change, we're adding new cryptography there as well. We don't call it out here, but even ASP.NET System Web, we made some changes there as well, allowing you to use async caching providers and async membership providers. But even cooler, we announced a new build of Visual Studio called VS 15 Preview. It's available for free right now, and it's got a bunch of cool improvements, and I thought I would start and show one of those improvements. So I'm a web guy when I started Microsoft, and it's been fun seeing a lot of the innovation we've had with web. I'm sure if you've done any web development in Chrome or Edge or Internet Explorer, you've probably played with these F12 developer tools in the browser. And they allow you to change your markup on the fly and see it in real time. If you're building a XAML application, a WPF application, it would be awesome if you could do that as well. So I've got an app here. Let me run it. And here it is, it's up. Now, historically, if you wanted to go change the UI for this application, what you would do is you would look at this, you would stop your application, go modify your source code, and then restart the application. That's a slow process. So let's try something new here. Because I'm running in debug mode, I've got this new toolbar here, and this is a selection item here. So I'm going to click this selection item, and I'm going to select Kevin. And then I'm going to click this button, which says synchronize Visual Studio with what I've selected in my application. And so here I'm in Visual Studio. And here is a tree inside of Visual Studio of my WPF markup, my XAML. If I click this button, it's going to bring the code right up into my editor. And I'm directly in the code. And now the cool thing here is I can do things like change a property here. So let's type something like font size equals 1. Let's go back to here. And you might have noticed that you can't read the text here anymore. Let me resize this so I can see all the text here. As I'm changing the source code inside of Visual Studio, my XAML is updating in real time. So that's really awesome, I think, because no longer do you have to wait for that stop compiling, modify your source code, launch the application, stop, restart. Now I can just come in here and live edit my XAML, and as I do, my application will react in real time. So you get an awesome real-time view of your XAML. And this is available today as part of the Dev 15 preview that I mentioned. Let me close this one out. And that's a feature that you actually would have done in the web years ago. And you can see us bringing web-style capabilities into XAML. Okay. Switch back here. Another feature that we have is we built this new technology called Universal Web Windows Applications. A Universal Windows application is a XAML application that can run on all Windows devices. If you build one application, you can run it on Windows Phone, you can run it on Windows tablets, and you can run it on Windows desktops. but a lot of our customers, and also as part of a Universal Windows application, that application can take place in the store inside of Windows 10. Well, I love all my WinForm and WPF customers, and I want to bring that same capability of being in the store and being a first-class citizen in the operating system to WinForm and WPF customers. So later this year, you're going to start seeing what we're going to call the UWP bridge, which allows you to take an existing WinForm or WPF application and run it like it's a universal Windows application, which means it can have a live tile, just like a UWP application has today. It can take place in search on the desktop, just like a UWP application does today. And it can even be placed in the store, like a UWP application can today. You're going to start seeing things like Microsoft Office show up in the Windows Store, and you'll be able to build applications and put them in there. So that's a way of us taking some of the future of Windows 10 and making it work great with our existing WinForm and WPF customers. Another thing we announced at Build was Update 2 for Visual Studio. And Update 2 for Visual Studio also brought us a wave of stuff as well. A lot of it being, if you're especially a UWP developer, we brought a new tool chain called for .NET Native that is much faster than the previous tool chain. And we fixed a ton of bugs in that space as well. And we're also increasing the amount of .NET you can actually talk to inside of there. And of course, everybody probably has heard about HoloLens, and we're making support for HoloLens as part of this update as well, and the ability to build Xbox applications and even IoT applications. So that's the new tools, and we saw this demo already. The next thing is, and this really excites me, is languages. I think one of the biggest things that makes .NET an awesome platform is that we've got awesome languages. Whether you're a C# customer and you like brackets, or you came from Visual Basic and you love writing begin-ins and stuff like that, or even if you're a functional developer, one of the things we want to do is make sure that .NET is a platform that any type of developer you are, you feel comfortable. And so we've got a variety of languages. It's the strength of our platform is there's not many platforms that support a variety of languages. And you're going to see us continue to innovate in these languages. So for example, C# 7. We just shipped C# 6 last year, and C# 7 is going to come later this year as part of the next version of Visual Studio, and it's got some awesome new capabilities, and I'll show those for you. So let me find this. So I've got a regular-looking C# application here, and people in the room have probably done this exact same thing before, where I've got some code, and notice that I want to return a result of multiple values. And so I created this class, SumResult. And I created this SumResult class. It's basically a throwaway class. I created it because I wanted to return multiple values, and a function in C# or a function in VB can only return one value today or one type. Now, what if I didn't want to do that? What if I could just do this instead? So I'll come here, I'm going to comment this out, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to say this is going to return an int with my sum and an int with my count, like that. And then down here, I'll just return my sum and my count. Oh, didn't like the new there. And let's fix that. And let's fix those as well. Okay, so I have an application that now builds and runs. Let's prove it's not fake. There you go. So why create all these junk classes, these throwaway classes? We've now modified C# so it can return multiple values anytime you want. And so my code became simpler. And the compiler knows about all this as well. So if I come and look at this T here, notice that it knows it's a tuple that returns a sum and a count. So the IntelliSense knows all about this. I can use C# features that we actually shipped already. And I can also do things like this. Why am I doing zeros and ones? Why not actually just put my values right here inside my string? That way I don't have to count over here where my result is. And I'm good to go. This feature actually shipped as part of the last round of Visual Studio, a C# innovation. And then finally, maybe I've got stuff other than just integers. So let me make this an object. And I'll change this to be object, because I might want to have multiple types of values in my array. And now I've got a problem in that this code isn't going to work, because it's going to look here and say the operator cannot be assigned because it's not the right type. What you might have done today is done something like this. If v is int, then run my code. And then I would probably do something like int I equals int v. I'd write something just like this. Well, once again, when we start looking at C#, that's kind of ugly. What if I could just do this instead? On my check, I can also define my variable, remove this line of code, and I'm good to go. Still runs the same way. And so these are the beginnings of some of the innovations you're going to see in C# 7. The first one's called tuples, and tuples is the feature where you can return multiple values from any C# function that you have. And the second one is just a nice language feature where you can actually, as you do a check of the type of something, you can also define the variable that you might want to put that into as well. And these are all coming as part of C# 7. And then what we'll do is, if you're a VB customer or if you're an F# customer, we'll make sure that these technologies, these new features, come down and are made available for all those languages as well. So this will not just be a C# thing. This will become a thing for the other languages too. This is actually the area, one of the areas of .NET that I have the most excitement for. So at Microsoft, we run into people, a lot of customers that have huge projects. It's not uncommon for me to talk to a customer and they say, yeah, I've got a solution, and my solution has 90 projects inside of it. And we're like, well, why are you doing that? You do that. So somebody in the front row said, I do that. Why do you do that? Oh, come on. The problem is, one of the biggest complaints we get about Visual Studio is we get complaints about how much memory it uses and how much performance it has. And of course, the more projects and stuff that you open, the slower it's going to be naturally, because it's got more stuff open. And so there's a whole team of us at Microsoft that are focusing on how do we make that productivity step faster. And there's a whole bunch of things we want to do. First off is, if you start typing a type, it would be great if NuGet would just go and say, hey, you don't have that in your project, let me go grab that and install it for you. A lot of reasons people actually open 70, 80 projects in a solution is because they have a lot of source code, they have a lot of class libraries, And they want to be able to press F12 in their tool and have it jump to the actual source code inside of their application. Right now, the only way to do that is to have all the projects in your solution. And then thirdly, well, I'll take that even a step further. What if you're actually bringing in a package like JSON.NET, not written by us, not written by you, and you want to trace into that? How would you do that? And so that's part of this as well. Not only will we index source code in your projects on your machine, but we're going to go index the source code of the top 100 NuGet packages and any source code that you might have in VSTS, Visual Studio Team System, that's where TFS and our Git support lives, or inside of GitHub itself. Another feature that we run into talking to customers all the time is, and I'm sure people in the room have lots of opinions here, is I like my C# formatted this way. I've actually sat in a room with my dev team, and they've argued about the style of C# and they grab some code from somebody else, and it's in some other format. We're going to make this a first-class feature in Visual Studio as well. You're going to be able to define what you want your C# to look like, or your VB to look like, or your F# to look like, and the tool will enforce it. Meaning that if you go and paste code from externals, it will be formatted the right way. If you pull it from source control, it will be formatted the right way. So you can enforce across your team how you want your source code to look so it's standardized across your entire team. Another cool thing is we had a product that we shipped years ago called FXCop. And inside of Microsoft, we all ran this thing. So when we were building ASP.NET and System Web, we could not ship unless we actually would pass all the FXCop rules. And what it was a static analyzer that looked at your source code and decided if you had followed the right rules and stuff, and Microsoft had a bunch of internal rules on how you write code, a lot of them around performance, because we have a huge document that I don't know why we have not shared to the public yet, maybe we have, of all the ways to use .NET code to make it super fast. Well, that product slowly has kind of faded to the backstream, but as we built Roslyn, and Roslyn, for those who don't know, that's the C# and VB language compiler that we have in Visual Studio today. Well, it has a feature called analyzers. And so now we can actually plug into the compiler. And still, instead of having to have an external tool run against my source code, the Roslyn compiler has the ability to run analyzers as I type and work in my code. And as I do that, it will actually run these analyzers and that can show up in my error window. And so no longer running FXCop requires me to go run a tool somewhere and parse the output of that. Now it can actually happen as part of my developer workflow. Even you in the room, you can write your own analyzers for Roslyn. Analyzers are actually just NuGet packages. And so I'll show in a few minutes, you can actually NuGet in analyzers for your source code, and they'll just work. And then another thing is, and this is interesting, we look at Microsoft. I look very closely at what my developers are doing in my product. Obviously, the most popular project in Visual Studio is a console library or a WinForm class. And a lot of reasons that we find that people write these console applications and they're only one or two lines is because they're actually just going to go test some code. Was anybody aware that we actually shipped an interactive window in update 1 in November that actually adds a C# console experience in VS? Does anybody know? Has anybody seen that feature? I see almost no hands. So let's play with that. Let's do a couple things here. Let me create a new VS. And I'm going to create a console application. Now, when I have a console application, one of the things I might want to do today, this is another new feature as well, I've got this developer assistant, this Bing developer assistant up here in my toolbar. And what it lets me do is things like Control-Shift-F1, and I can ask it questions. And one of my questions might be, I want to convert between XML, and JSON. And it went and found something here. Let's see if that's what I actually want. That's what I want, that NewtonSoft. So I can grab this code, and I can paste it in here. And then when I do, I'll get the normal squigglies I would expect. XML document, it doesn't know that I haven't used that type, so let me bring up a light bulb here and add a using. But it also JSON convert, that's from JSON.net, which I don't have included in my project. And this is really interesting over here. This is my references node, and this is showing all of the things that I have in my project. Now, I want you to watch this. Now I've got a new light bulb, and my new light bulb, see if I make it fit on the screen here, I can say install with the package manager. So I'll click that. Don't fight me. And it went and found it there, but that's not what I wanted it to do. It's fighting me a little bit here. Find and install the latest version. There you go. It's going out to NuGet, finding the latest version, and now it's referenced that. So, do what? It is not already shipped. It almost made it into update 2. The question was, has this already shipped? It almost made it into update 2. It did not. Now, notice that when that happened, it did add NewtonSoft here. Now, this is a really, what I'm going to show next is really slick. If I, and I just want to prove that I'm doing it, if I come up to edit and I say undo that, you should notice my references just shrunk down. We're now putting the NuGet stuff into the undo, redo buffers. And so as you add these things, you can control, if I do a redo, a control Y. NewtonSoft just showed back up under references, and now I'm good to go. And so that's pretty cool. You're gonna see this in future updates. It'll ship this year. Now that I've got that, that's great. But you know, I really want to see the source code for serialized XML node. So I'll select that, and then I'll press F12. And I have just gone and grabbed source code from GitHub of NewtonSoft. So because we've indexed all that source code, I now can just press F12 in the top 100 packages that I like. But it goes further than that. This source code, obviously, because it's not in my project anywhere. I mean, you'll see I don't have anything here. I've only got the one file. It went and found that source code in GitHub, but even better than that, I can actually come over here, put a breakpoint in that source code up in GitHub, and if I run my application, in debug, I just hit a breakpoint in source code on GitHub, not on my machine. Is that cool or what? And so it's all about productivity. How can I make you guys more successful, faster? And so the idea is, you'll be able to use the same indexing capability I just showed to index all the source code on your developer machine, in your own source code repos, and then your F12 tools and all that stuff will work across these things. In the long run, I'd like to even let you be able to refactor throughout your entire project, so you don't have to have the solution with 90 projects. Have your solution with the minimal number of things, and you're good to go. I mentioned earlier the analyzers. So I've got this project over here, and this exists today. If you actually go and take the current copy of Visual Studio and you open up your references node, there's this new node called Analyzers, and this is where the Roslyn analyzers can be installed in. So I can come to my machine here, and in my case, I have these things on a local feed. These are all in NuGet. If you find me later today, I'll show you how to find these things in NuGet, and I'm gonna add a couple of analyzers. So first off, what should I put in? Design guidelines. Let's do that. So we'll put API design guidelines in because that's an interesting one. And I'll put runtime in. So let's just install these NuGet packages. There's one. And let's do system runtime analyzer, I think. Yeah, let's add that one. Now, after I do these two steps, that analyzer code, or node, now opens up. So all the things that we used to have as FXCOP rules now exist under these nodes as analyzers. I can click on one of these things, and I can decide to set how I want it to work. Do you want this to just have the default behavior? Do you want an error? Do you just want to ignore it because you don't care about these rules? And so what we'll do before we ship the next version of Visual Studio is we're going to take all the analyzers that we run internally on the source code that we use to build the .NET framework, make them available to you. You can decide which projects you want to use them in. You just NuGet them into your project, and you can set the policies on when they run. And they're a little bit better than the old FXCOP. In the old days of FXCOP, what it would do is it would actually tell me my code was wrong, and that was it. So let's take some of these and try these out. So I'm going to bring an exception in here. And I get a squiggle because something's wrong here. Now what's cool is, unlike FXCOP, now I have the ability to have it go and implement the fix for the code and even give me a preview of what that fix might look like. And so I'll click yeah, go ahead and fix that for me. And what it's doing here is basically, when you build an exception, it should actually take both no string and a string, and it's enforcing that kind of rule for me. That's the way exceptions should actually work in .NET. And this extends to other areas as well. I can bring in got another one here. I'm going to bring in some async code here. And in this case, this is something I wasn't aware of. If you call await on some code, if you don't know if you're going to run it in a web application or a desktop application, there's actually some code you should actually add here. I'll click here and say apply config await false. And this config await false that it actually adds here is designed for code that you put into a class library that you don't know where it's going to be called from. This makes sure that if you run this in a desktop app, like a WinForm WPF or a UWP application, it doesn't block the UI thread. I was not aware of that. And I've got one final one. And this is the next one is an example of the kind of thing that we would do at Microsoft as part of the work we do. Notice that I have an array here of size 0. That's actually a waste. That's going to use memory that I don't need to use because we actually have a singleton, array.empty.int, which means if you have a billion of these empty arrays in your application, each of those actually is allocating memory, while you can actually share and use one of these across your entire project. So I want to show one more thing real quick. I'll go back to slides. That was some of the productivity stuff. .NET Core, there's a lot of talks on .NET Core today. In fact, I've got a talk on .NET Core today. And I have a surprise for anybody. If anybody comes to my .NET Core talk later today, it's called .NET CLI. We've been trying to ship ASP.NET 5, which then became ASP.NET Core, for about a year and a half, or almost 2 years now. And what we did is, a few months ago, the ASP.NET team had built something called DNX, which was web only, and the .NET team was building something called .NET CLI, which was broader and more than just web, and we merged those two things together, and that caused my release date to slip out on ASP.NET. So originally we had hoped to actually RTM ASP.NET at build, but that didn't happen because we're merging these two things together. Merging them was actually a harder concept than we thought. So anybody that wants to, if you're in my .NET CLI talk later today, I actually have the first set of tooling bits that we've actually gotten as part of this new effort. I showed them off a week ago or earlier this week. I have them on a memory stick. If anybody wants them, we've actually tested them at Microsoft to make sure they don't destroy your machine. I can help you install them. But come to the talk if you want to try the bits out. and it will let you start building ASP.NET Core applications using what we call the new .NET CLI. So I've got those bits. Obviously, ASP.NET Core, Scott talked a little bit about that this morning. I think there's a talk right after Donovan's done. There's an ASP.NET Core talk by somebody else. I'm not going to go too deep into that. I mentioned this earlier, Red Hat loves us. Before I stop, let me switch machines, and I want to show you something else cool. And in my talk later today, I'm going to show you how to use... See if I can make the machine happy here. Okay. So we started shipping Visual Studio Code about a year ago, I think November of, not last year, but the year before. And VS Code is our cross-platform lightweight IDE or lightweight text editor. Let me go to an application here. And I'm going to bring VS Code up. And I'll show people how to do this today as well in my talk. VS Code is a great text editor. It's very fast, very lightweight. And Scott Hanselman mentioned OmniSharp, and it uses OmniSharp behind the scenes to do all the IntelliSense and some of the colorization stuff like that. We're just about done with a new capability for C-sharp inside of VS Code, and that's debugging. And so you'll notice here, I've got a breakpoint here. Make this come on. I've got a breakpoint here, red dot. And now, inside of VS Code, I have the ability to press F5. It'll compile my project if necessary. My breakpoint hits. So we now have full C-sharp debugging inside of VS Code. Come to my talk later today, yeah? I think it's pretty awesome. And just to make it not fake, I prove it's not fake. Not some Microsoft guy on stage making stuff up. In this case, I've got an ASP.NET Core application. I've got a breakpoint in one of my views, and I have a breakpoint in my startup.cs file. It is here. I'll press F5. My first breakpoint just hit, which, as I would expect, I'll continue running the application. I can see the web server's now started. I'll bring up my machine here. We'll see stuff start scrolling as ASP.NET boots up and starts trying to run the application. And now if I go to my About, breakpoint hits. So even inside of a full ASP.NET application, full debugging in VS Code. So, and you're going to continue to see us add more innovation to VS Code. As we build new features in VS, I don't want to just put them in VS, I want to put them in code as well. So you're going to see me take some of those productivity features I showed you in Visual Studio, and I'm going to move those to code as well. So you're going to continue to see us push the envelope here. How am I on time? Almost out of time. Finally, I'll stop on the VS Code thing and say one final thing on that, which is if you come to my session later today, I will show you how to install the pre-release extensions to make the VS Code debugging work today if you want to try that. So in my session, I'm going to do a little bit of talk, and then I want to do some hands-on, so where I show people how to make some of this stuff actually work. Let's see if it'll switch. So I like to say, as I started, that there is no better time to be a .NET developer. If you want to build desktop applications across Windows 7 up, we have you supported. You want to build Windows Universal applications across all Windows devices, we have you supported. If you want to build server applications, we've got you supported, cross-platform. If you want to build devices on iOS and Android, we have you supported. Anything you want to do, you can do on .NET. So there's not a better time ever to be a .NET developer. So thank you guys very much. Hope you enjoy the platform and the product, and please sign me and give me any feedback.